Welcome to the Kanem, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Why does NASA fail so often in its missions? Consider that the mission is hardly what is stated to the public, but something entirely different. Doing simple space exploration? Going to the Moon and Mars out of curiosity? Hardly. To discover why NASA fails, one must explore their real missions, which are 1. To deny the alien presence, i.e. UFOs. 2. To support getting the elite to the Moon or to Mars to ride out the pole shift. And 3. To snoop on Planet X and attempt to deflect Planet X from its trajectory, its passage past Earth, which is sure to cause a pole shift. The cross-currents of these true missions have put them into conflict with the Council of Worlds, and at times these mission statements have put NASA in conflict with itself. In the words of the Zetas, this is the current NASA mess. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Moon Landing, written May 15, 2002. NASA of late has been dealing with its many failures, its inability to get a space station operational in time to stage escape to Mars, and the months upon months of delays getting any shuttles up at all. They have for years denied the public direct Hubble images, been caught endlessly airbrushing out UFOs, and are suspected all around the world of a conspiracy regarding the moon landing itself. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Well, isn't NASA an independent agency? Civilian? A closer look shows they are controlled, their budget controlled, by the Pentagon. And I quote again from Zeta Talk, NASA, written November 15, 1995. Why does NASA, a supposedly independent organization, cooperate by failing to scrutinize the surface of Mars and the Moon, or at least failing to allow the American public to so scrutinize? NASA is a separate entity. They, of course, are influenced by the CIA, who has members within the NASA hierarchy, but they function, just as the post office does, as separate. But are they not a servant of the taxpayer, supported by American tax dollars as they are? The myth that government is accountable to the people is disproved daily in the news, and organizations under contract to the government have even less accountability. Think of NASA as you do your neighbor or grocer. They try not to break the law or get caught at it when they do, but beyond how they lead their lives, has nothing to do with you. You, the taxpayer, are to be ignored and manipulated for their comfort and convenience. Where NASA may not be accountable to the people, they are accountable to the Pentagon and the dollars it controls. Money talks. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. What are some of the methods that NASA uses outside of airbrushing UFOs or images of Planet X out of images they release to the public? One early method used is to deny a direct feed from the Hubble. Another is to deny images, giving them to what they call principal investigators instead. This is a well-known fact that NASA gives buddies the right to the Hubble images, supposedly for research, and claims this research would not be done unless the investigator had exclusive rights to the images. A perfect way to exclude the public and the taxpayer from what they have paid for. Here's NASA's explanation of that practice. And I quote from the HubbleSite.org. Can we see live photos from Hubble? Answer. There is no real-time camera or webcam on board the telescope for live relay links. The images that the Hubble takes are digital pictures and spectra released to the public after 1 year to allow the investigators time to do their research. Question: does Hubble withhold information from the public? Answer: no. Information and images taken by Hubble Space Telescope are not withheld, but they do take time to get to the public. Many of the images taken by Hubble are never formally released to the public because they are typically only of interest to the scientific community. End of the quote from the Hubble website. Not withheld from the public? Made available after a year? That's not what the public says. And I quote from Hoagland's website, Enterprise Mission. To the shock and amazement of many in the planetary science community, the Space Telescope Science Institute on April 16, 1999, released the first Hubble Space Telescope images ever taken of the Moon. What was shocking to so many of these scientists and researchers was not what was on the images, but rather that the images themselves ever existed. You see, for more than 5 years, NASA has been consistently claiming that the Hubble flatly could not image the Moon, using the ostensible reason that the Moon was too bright to image with a sensitive telescope instrument. Employees have been publicly and privately suppressing any efforts, especially those of this investigation, to shoot the Moon. End of the quote from Hoagland's site. What is the logic behind withholding images of the Moon, if not to deny the alien presence and the cities and debris on the Moon? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Escape Plan, written January 15, 1999. National security is used as the excuse. To demonstrate how secretive these plans can be, look at how much of the Hubble's true pictures you see. They are given out like Christmas presents, once a year, perhaps. They are given to private investigators who somehow are given the rights to direct Hubble images as though they had paid for it when the taxpayer paid for it. Yet no matter how vociferously complained about, this practice has continued unabated, and this shows you the grip of control that those elites have over this whole matter. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Given that the secret NASA missions are to first deny the alien presence, what proof do we have that this is the case? Does NASA lie? They've been caught at it. NASA has been caught working closely with the CIA on lies, for instance, on the U-2 episode in 1960. I quote from a message board summary on the issue. NASA has often been in bed with our national security state agencies, and it is doubtful that it's ever been a truly independent civilian organization. The earliest well-documented example is the infamous U-2 shootdown by the Russians in 1960. The CIA had NASA put out a cover story that the downed U-2 was really an errant NASA Air Force weather research plane flying out of Turkey. Supposedly, the pilot passed out from oxygen deprivation and the plane went off course and crashed. NASA even went so far as to manufacture phonied transcripts of communications with the pilot before he passed out. To bolster the cover story, a NASA insignia was quickly painted on a U-2 along with a fictitious NASA serial number and put on display for the news media at the NASA Flight Research Center at Edwards Air Force Base. NASA complicity with the CIA concerning the true purpose of the U-2 dated back to 1956. The director issued 2 press releases that the U-2 aircraft were conducting weather research with Air Force support. The U-2 unit operating out of Turkey was designated a weather reconnaissance squadron. End of the quote. And NASA's not the only agency so required to cooperate with the CIA. Per reports provided by Stephen Greer of the Disclosure Project, the FAA, NORAD, and the Apollo astronauts have been leaned on too and told to lie. And I quote from Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, "Government is covering up UFO evidence," as published in the Washington Times, May 10, 2001. The U.S. government has been covering up evidence of extraterrestrial visits for more than 50 years. An array of 20 retired Air Force, Federal Aviation Administration, and intelligence officers said Wednesday. They demanded Congress hold hearings on what they say is long-standing secret U.S. involvement with UFOs and extraterrestrials. Calling it the greatest secret of the 20th century, the officials who termed themselves witnesses of UFO-related events described a series of military investigations they said they saw. Crashes of alien spacecraft, bodies of alien beings, secret government documents, even James Bond-style erasures of people who knew too much. Dr. Stephen Greer, director of the Disclosure Project, had gathered the witnesses. The 20 witnesses, he said, were a fraction of the 400 people who were willing to testify under oath and under congressional immunity about a secret portion of the government they say has gone out of control. UFOs have long fascinated Americans, including several U.S. presidents. Webster L. Hubbell, a former associate attorney general under President Clinton, has described in an autobiography his unsuccessful quest to determine government involvement in the topic. John Callahan, a former FAA division chief of accidents and investigations, said he was directed by CIA officers to cover up a November 18, 1986 incident involving a UFO and a Japanese airliner near Anchorage, Alaska. Michael Smith, a former U.S. Air Force air traffic controller stationed near Klamath Falls, Oregon in the 1960s and early 1970s, reported seeing a UFO hovering at 80,000 feet one night. "I was told you keep it to yourself," he said. NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, called me one night to say, "There's a UFO coming up the California coastline." I asked them what to do about it. They said nothing, not to write it down. Apollo astronauts had spotted UFOs, but they are all told to keep this quiet and not talk about it. One of them, Edgar Mitchell, who walked on the moon as part of the Apollo 14 team, is a witness for Project Disclosure. Carl Wolf, an Air Force sergeant who was assigned to the National Security Agency, said that mysterious structures were discovered on the far side of the moon when the United States was mapping its surface before the 1969 lunar landing. Those photos, too, were culled out of the public record. The Pentagon does not comment on UFOs except to say they do not exist and that such objects really are high-altitude balloons, swamp gas, or military aircraft. End of the quote. And most certainly, this press from the CIA resulted in silenced astronauts. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Silenced Astronauts," written April 15, 1996. The world watched in rapt attention during the first Apollo moon landing, a first for mankind. The comments made by the astonished astronauts, who noted signs that they were not the first visitors to the moon, have generated all manner of speculation. What did they see? From the Earth, the surface of the moon looks placid, unwashed by water and without an atmosphere. Nothing moves on the pockmarked surface. Up close, however, one would discover dust-covered litter and tracks left by vehicles, unmistakable signs that mankind was not the first. Machinery parts, collapsed structures, tie lines, and even a wheel or two here and there, covered by space dust that never washes away. These items look no different from Earth than the dust-covered rocks and craters. Were the astronauts silenced? Without a doubt. With the ultimate threats used on occasion carried out in those days, death, in a manner that is undetectable as an execution. Those with high security clearances know these are not idle threats, as they have seen them enforced or learn of these instances, and thus take them quite seriously. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Indeed, to maintain the silence on the alien presence, assassinations have occurred. For instance, Phil Schneider. And I quote from UFO Digest, "The Mysterious Life and Death of Philip Snyder." Philip Snyder's life was certainly as controversial as his death. He was born on April 23, 1947, at Bethesda Naval Hospital. Philip's parents were Oscar and Sally Snyder, and Oscar Snyder was a captain in the United States Navy, worked in nuclear medicine, and helped design the first nuclear submarines. Captain Snyder was also part of Operation Crossroads, which was responsible for the testing of nuclear weapons in the Pacific at Bikini Island. In a lecture videotaped on May 1996, Philip Schneider claimed that his father, Captain Oscar Schneider, was also involved in the infamous Philadelphia experiment. In addition, Philip claimed to be an ex-government structural engineer who was involved in building underground military bases around the country and to be one of only three people to survive the 1979 incident between the alien Greys and U.S. military forces at the Dulce underground base. Philip Snyder's ex-wife believes that Philip was murdered because he publicly revealed the truth about the U.S. government's involvement with UFOs. For 2 years prior to his death, Philip Snyder had been on a lecture tour talking about government cover-ups, black budgets, and UFOs. Philip stated in his lecture that in 1954, under the Eisenhower administration, the federal government decided to circumvent the Constitution and form a treaty with extraterrestrials. End of the quote from UFO Digest. And Bill Cooper, another ex-Navy man aware of the alien presence, killed in 2001 under very suspicious circumstances, supposedly resisting an arrest. David Icke reports, William Cooper, an ex-naval intel, blew his top security clearance by putting together a press conference where he laid out the structure of this country's shadow government, tracing its roots to the UFO alien cover-ups that began in the 1940s and 1950s. He was very concise and explicit, naming names and documentation, offices and meetings from the 50s on down to the 70s. He literally ripped the lid off the cover-up and told his audience that he'd probably be killed for this. He was. End of the quote from David Icke. To deny the alien presence required that NASA silence astronauts who blab in astonishment when they find evidence of the alien presence on the moon, for instance, forcing a studio filming of landings as a substitute for the real thing. A controversy over whether the moon landings ever occurred has thus emerged, pointing to details on the Apollo 11 landing indicating a studio filming. And I quote from a website on this moon hoax. Images of Neil Armstrong's walk on the moon on July 20, 1969 were shown to the world through the lens of master filmmaker Stanley Kubrick and staged on the same UK soundstage where Kubrick made his landmark film 2001: A Space Odyssey. Don't believe it? Consider the evidence. Still images taken of the American flag on the moon showed it waving this way and that, but there was no wind on the moon. The moon is affected by extreme temperature changes, which are exacerbated by its lack of atmosphere. The camera supposedly used to take the lunar stills, a Hazelblad 500, would not operate at temperature extremes that caused chemical changes in film emulsion. Mechanical parts expand and lenses loosen in extreme heat. Exposure meters fail and film shatters like glass in extreme cold. X-rays from the sun fogged the film, and ultraviolet rays would distort the colors, yet the colors in the moon landing pictures are perfect. Gravity on the moon is 1/6 that of the Earth, which means that an astronaut who would weigh 140 kilograms in his spacesuit on the ground would weigh only about 30 kilos on the moon. And yet the depth of the astronaut's footprint in the sand on the moon suggests they weighed much more than that. None of the photos taken on the moon showed evidence of a flash. You would have seen a flash because the astronaut taking the photograph would have been reflected in the visor of the other astronaut. People lie. The evidence doesn't. End of the quote from this website. For the Zetas, both were done. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Moon Landing, written May 15, 2002. A hot topic on the Internet and among conspiracy buffs is whether man ever indeed landed on the moon, or all the evidence provided to mankind is faked. As evidence of a fake is apparent wind blowing a flag, dust raised by landing feet blowing about as though air were present to move it, shadows inappropriate for the moon, and other evidence of atmosphere or staging. Did man go to the moon? Absolutely. Were dramatizations done in film theaters? Absolutely. Both occurred, and here's why. As is often reported, the early moon landings involved startled astronauts making statements on live feed about, "We were not the first," and the like. Likewise, live video feeds showed trash on the moon, giving evidence that activity had occurred in the past, and perhaps the recent past. Evidence of awareness of the alien presence or other information not given to the general public can often be discerned from what is not said as much as what is said. Why the 3-month delay in reporting the Arizona mothership sighting in 1997, for instance, by different media organizations, if approval to report was not part of the process? Likewise, the astronauts were on a need-to-know basis, as they were expected to be mobbed if they succeeded and went on the lecture tour, often interviewed and the like, and slips were to be avoided by telling them as little as possible. Thus, they were genuinely startled by what they found on the moon, and their handlers in Houston were unaware of the degree of evidence that they would in fact find on the moon. Whoops, what to do? Let's just film some new footage and release that instead. NASA was aware that there were alien enclaves on the dark side of the moon, but unaware of the trash on the visible side. During early genetic engineering projects, the engineers often used the moon as a lab, fearing and wishing to avoid the large carnivores on Earth. During these genetic engineering episodes, they would scarcely be hiding on the dark side of the moon. Why hide? The aliens talking to NASA going into the Apollo missions were service to self, part of Alternative 2, to set up camps off Earth as a survival means during the coming pole shift. They were on the dark side, as service to self aliens do not do density shifting well, a la the movie The Fly, and their masters do not allow their minions to shift during missions for this reason. Thus they are in your density, highly visible from Earth should they not be on the dark side of the moon. NASA expected this, but discussion on past genetic engineering projects, which were not done by the service to self, never came up. The astronauts were read the riot act when they returned, having blabbed their first impressions on the moon. It has been obvious to those looking at the pattern that prior to this, live feeds were the norm, and after, delayed and only partial release of video and audio was allowed. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. A 3-month delay in reporting a mothership sighting seen in Arizona from one side of the state to the other? Indeed, from March 13th to June 20th, 1997, when USA Today and other major media began talking about it. A 3-month silence. And I quote from USA Today, dated June 20th, 1997. Something happened in the skies over Arizona in the night of March 13th. No one is sure what it was, but thousands saw it, dozens videotaped it, and people all over the state are haunted by it still. And the army of people demanding answers has grown to the point that a Phoenix city councilwoman has launched an inquiry. A Gallup poll last September found that 72% of Americans think there is life on other planets, and 71% said they think the U.S. government knows more about UFOs than it's telling. End of the quote from USA Today. Where one of NASA's missions was to help the elite escape to the moon or to Mars, to ride out the pole shift in relative safety, this came into conflict with the directives to deny the alien presence. Thus, per the Zetas, the Apollo 13 accident, which was no accident. Statements made by astonished astronauts that man was not the first to land on the moon were to be avoided at all costs. A decision was made to abort the Apollo flights, creating a disaster that would cripple the program in the public's eye. The accident, as reported by NASA itself, and I quote from the NASA website on the accident, launched April 11, 1970. Malfunction forced cancellation of lunar landing. Return to Earth April 17, 1970. There's one whole side of that spacecraft missing, Jim Lovell said as the Apollo 13 astronauts got their first view of the damage that had been caused by the explosion. The Apollo 13 malfunction was caused by an explosion and rupture of oxygen tank number 2 in the service module. The explosion ruptured a line or damaged a valve in the number 1 oxygen tank, causing it to lose oxygen rapidly. all oxygen stores were lost within about 3 hours, along with loss of water, electrical power, and use of the propulsion system. End of the quote from NASA. Wow. This dramatic incident became a movie, Apollo 13, and I quote from that movie blurb. It has been less than a year since man first walked on the moon, but as far as the American public was concerned, Apollo 13 was just another routine spaceflight, until these words pierced the immense void of space. Houston, we have a problem. Stranded 205,000 miles from Earth in a crippled spacecraft, astronauts fight a desperate battle to survive. Meanwhile, at Mission Control, a heroic ground crew race against time and the odds to bring them home. End of the quote. And the Zetas explain. I quote from Zeta Talk, Apollo 13, written May 1996. At the inception of the Apollo program, the secret government had a dual mission, to withhold knowledge of the alien presence from the general public and to arrange for an escape from the coming millennium cataclysms for the elite. At the inception of the Apollo program, the elite of the secret government were looking for several different means of dealing with the coming cataclysms. Alternatives 1, 2, and 3. Alternative 1 was to reduce overpopulation and sculpt the face of mankind to their liking. Alternative 2 was to burrow into subterranean cavities. And Alternative 3 was to establish space stations on other planets. Alternative 3 proved unworkable, and Alternative 2 thereafter became the main focus. It is no longer a secret that opulent underground escape hatches, complete with golf courses, were constructed for the elite. Thus, though the Apollo space program had been enthusiastically started, it soon fell into disfavor, and the fact that it was at odds with the mission to suppress knowledge of the alien presence soon took precedence. As a result of certain studies which the government solicited, there was early on, in the secret government, a decision not to reveal to the populace any material that would lead one to conclude that man was not alone. This secrecy mandate put the Apollo moon mission at odds with one of the missions of the secret government, which in those days was heavily influenced by the CIA. The U.S. space program thus came steadily under the control of the intelligence agencies, and to this day are more prone to issue disinformation than perform scientific advancement. It is no secret that the U.S. space program fell apart and is today a sham of its former self. To abort the enthusiastic moon missions, which were often being watched live by the public, the CIA threw a wrench in the works. Apollo 13 was a distressed mission due solely to sabotage, and this sabotage was rewarded. The moon missions were stopped. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Indeed, they were stopped, ending with Apollo 17, 1972. What were the key Apollo goals? And I quote from the NASA website, to establish the technology to meet other national interests in space, to achieve preeminence in space for the United States, to carry out a program of scientific exploration of the moon, to develop man's capability to work in the lunar environment. End of the quote from NASA. Did those goals change? Why no more flights after 1972? Apollo 11 was the first to land on the moon and occurred on July 16, 1969. So we learned all there was to learn about the moon? And what of NASA's second mission to help the elite escape to the moon or Mars to ride out the pole shift in relative safety? Just what are these plans? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Escape Plan, written January 1999. From its inception, NASA was attempting to secure, as much as anything, an escape from the forthcoming cataclysms. They still have that as a dominant agenda. The members of NASA and JPL who have been watching Planet X approach in accordance with our prediction some 50 years ago have come to nervously accept the reality of our exact predictions. They wish to find a safe haven during the shift itself, The thought of being on an earth that will slip about with sloshing water and crashing plates is unsettling. They would like a vantage point on Mars, and from that, when the rock and roll is over, they would settle down at the best-looking agricultural setting in the world and walk off well-prepared to take over as kings. This escape route would be for the elite of not only the U.S. government and U.S. military, but other elites around the world. This is well disguised in talk about science research in the skies and exploring the universe, but this is all to camouflage the real plans, which would be to take dozens or even hundreds of individuals away. The fact that John Glenn recently went up into space was to test how oldsters deal with these takeoffs and landings. This was poorly disguised, and the taxpayer wondered why they needed geriatrics in space. Well, of course, that's because some of these people who have secured a place for themselves are not all that young, and they are just getting prepared. The group will be composed primarily of old men and very young women. It's not surprising that George Bush Sr. took a skydive recently and mentioned in the news that he was not too old for such an activity. He's trying to demonstrate to his peers that he's ready to go. They hope to get up there and set up a base that will be a very firm air-sealed and air-locked tents with little suits that they can get into quickly. They're already practicing how to grow their own food via hydroponics. This is something that has been going on for decades, of course, as a means to provide fresh food for those in the space station. They are looking for water, but they know there's water there. They hope to watch the show from a distance, watch the Earth, poor thing, lurch about. After a year or so has passed, when they can see that things have settled down, they'll come back down. Then they'll zoom around, taking their time deciding just where to land, and will land where there seems to be some good agriculture, some settlements, and emerge as kings. This is their plan, but none of this will happen. They won't succeed, but we don't expect them to give up. Many layers are built between the taxpayers' eyes and the actual NASA expenditures. NASA is an independent company under contract to the government, under contract, in fact, to government agencies that can scarcely be scrutinized by the average taxpayer, so that the layer upon layer of money shuffling protects the real expenditures and plans very nicely. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on the escape plan. How has this progressed? Not well, per the Zetas. As to succeed, they need an assist from aliens, were promised this assist, and are still hoping it comes through. After all, aliens took them to their installations on the moon in the past, to their installations on the Earth's dark twin in the past, so surely this would come through when the pole shift was about to happen. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Mars Press, written January 2004. Why the pressure to put rovers on Mars when the economy is tanking, homelessness of citizens is beyond the ability of cities to assist, and money to support such ventures is lacking? It has been no secret that the elite hoped to escape to Mars or the dark side of the moon during the cataclysms. In this, they were not relying entirely on human efforts, as service-to-self aliens, whom the elite had given the call to during their obsession with themselves, had promised to carry them there. Of course, the service-to-self lie, and the lie has lately been put to the test. No delivery, despite demands that now is the time for migration to well-stocked and secure Mars and Moon enclaves. Despite endless failures, such as disabled probes and the dramatic disintegration of the Columbia and a leaking space station, renewed efforts to put humans on the Moon and Mars are seemingly optimistic. Why? This is a false front, whistling in the dark, akin to a bridegroom stood up at the altar but refusing to let the family and guests know the situation. He has a dowry to consider, wants to save face, does not want to fall in stature in the eyes of the family and guests who will think less of him if the truth is known. So he lies about his bride, claims all is well, and even exaggerates his claims, hoping that at the last moment it will all come together again. The elite plan to return, impressing survivors with their supposed command of technology, to rule as kings over the struggling survivors on Earth thrown back into the caveman days. No mention was to be made of the alien assist they required. This is why, despite the gaps in their technical readiness to send a manned mission to Mars before the cataclysms, the elite have been pressing forward with their exploration and bravado. Survivors might remember that they were in the process, were optimistic, so the story, upon return, would seem reasonable. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on the Mars Press. Much of what NASA has been up to over the decades can be explained by their early knowledge of the coming passage of Planet X. They were and are obsessed with getting off the surface of the Earth to ride out the pole shift on Mars or the Moon, which will not have the horrific earthquakes or tidal waves that Earth will experience. Thus, the obsession during the Apollo space flights to the Moon with Orion, which has no relationship to the Moon. Orion is within the Apollo logo. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Apollo logo, written December 1996. NASA was obsessed with the constellation of Orion at the Apollo program's inception. As this is indeed the path of the approach of Planet X, does the adoption of the Apollo logo indicate early knowledge of the coming cataclysms? It does indeed, as long before the active search for Planet X, there were undeniable perturbations in the outer planets, which in essence solved the mystery of what the ancient legends told about the placement of the Great Pyramids. They knew its certain approach, and much of the impetus behind the Apollo program, the rush to the Moon, was to gain mankind the ability to maneuver within the solar system, and at the very least to afford an escape route for the privileged few who would have access to such an escape. The NASA logo points an incriminating finger at those who refused to give the general populace the knowledge they themselves held in privy, knowledge they still today withhold from the taxpayers who funded the Apollo flights. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on the Apollo logo. And thus the assassination of Robert Harrington, who was considered too loose-lipped about the presence of Planet X. I quote from a Neil Freer website. In 1992, Harrington and Van Flandern of the Naval Observatory worked with all the information they had at hand, published their findings and opinion that there was, indeed, a tenth planet, even calling it an intruder planet. Harrington invited Sitchin to a meeting at his office, and they correlated their current findings with the ancient records, and Harrington acknowledged the detail of the ancient records while indicating where the tenth planet may now be in the solar system. It is interesting that Harrington dispatched an appropriate telescope to Black Birch, New Zealand, to get a visual confirmation, based on the data leading to the expectation that it would be below the ecliptic in the southern skies at this point in its orbit. On Harrington's early death, the scope was immediately called back, as one observer noticed, almost before he was cold. End of the quote. If the service to self-aliens are refusing requests to take the elite to Mars or other installations on demand, is something else afoot? Yes. The Council of Worlds has decreed that there will be no escape to Mars or elsewhere for the elite. The Anunnaki are on Mars mining for gold, and there is a quarantine in place. And a quote from Zeta Talk, Mars Exploration, written December 1996. Where the race to space in the 60s was originally spurred in part by the knowledge that the Earth was to experience another passage of Planet X in its near future, this factor is almost solely responsible for the Mars exploration fever of the late 1990s. Back then, NASA felt they had time to learn how to establish space stations far from the cataclysms the Earth was to undergo, and was smugly confident that the U.S. taxpayer would be forced to pay for the personal escape route the elite at NASA and in the establishment fully intended to use when the time came. After the Apollo 13 disaster, entrenching occurred and the Earth itself was looked upon as the best refuge. However, it has recently been determined that the escape routes planned for the elite on Earth are not as safe as expected. Man-made excavations at installations such as Mount Weather are at great risk of collapsing and entombing the smug elite who rush there, slamming the doors to safety in the face of the taxpayers who paid for these retreats. Thus, a temporary safe haven on the surface of Mars now again looks like the best bet. In that mankind has been quarantined from encounters with the giant hominids from Planet X, so that the enslavement of mankind that used to occur in the past would not be reinstituted, such manned flights to Mars will not be allowed to succeed. Quarantines are effected by subtle means. Accidents, often after a period where success seems close at hand, has occurred. This tends to devastate the backer's more than constant failure. As mankind is scarcely able to live in space and has not mastered maintaining mankind in this environment, there are many obstacles to getting to and living on Mars in the first place. Thus, we hardly have to step in, as they are failing already. But should they appear to be succeeding, technological failures will occur. The series of mishaps that occurred in 1996 and accompanied the rush to place man on Mars are not accidents, as those at NASA are aware. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Have accidents occurred? Shall we list some of them? Quoting from the December 1, 1996 San Francisco Chronicle, NASA nervous about Mars launch. The Russian probe, which failed shortly after liftoff and fell from orbit 2 weeks ago, bringing worries that plutonium on board might contaminate Earth upon reentry. Russian space officials still aren't sure, or aren't saying, why the spacecraft never made it out of orbit and plunged through the atmosphere shortly after its November 16th launch. And from that same December 1st San Francisco Chronicle, NASA scraps astronaut spacewalk as too risky. Engineers are perplexed as to why the handle on the hatch would not swing into the unlock position. They suspected the door might be out of alignment and that the astronauts might be able to shove it back in place. But the situation could not be duplicated with equipment on the ground. End of the quotes. In the summer of 2002, the Contour probe was zapped, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Contour probe, written August 2002. What is the reason for these disasters outside of the quarantine, and what was the true mission the equipment disabled were upon? The shuttles were disabled to make the message clear to those hoping to leave Earth, hopping to Mars or outside the influence of a pole shift on the surface of Earth, that escape will not be allowed. We have stated this years ago, and now you see the force behind these words. The gloves are now off. Do they think they will go aloft, get these space stations operational as a landing spot, and actually make Mars habitable until a return to Earth post-shift? Should this scenario be sold to the dumb, rich, and frightened, it will no longer fly. No one save the utterly gullible would buy into the statement that NASA can succeed now. This probe, as you might imagine, was not going to head for some silly, dirty snowball, but was heading straight for the beef, Planet X. There it was to report all manner of information, and thus the probe, which would have returned information that could be used by the elite, was zapped. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Then the dramatic tearing apart of the Columbia upon reentry in January 2003. And I quote from CNN. NASA vows to find cause of shuttle disaster, dated February 1, 2003. Streaking through the atmosphere at 18 times the speed of sound, Columbia disintegrated Saturday morning about 15 minutes before its scheduled landing at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. With their voices sometimes threatening to break, NASA officials vowed they would find the cause of the disaster so their colleagues' sacrifice would not be in vain. Witnesses in Texas reported debris falling from the sky, accompanied by a cascade of thunder. Reports of charred debris stretch from South Dallas into Louisiana and can turn up as far east as Arkansas and as far west as Arizona and New Mexico. Space shuttle flights have been put on hold until NASA can learn what caused the disaster. NASA says the International Space Station, where two astronauts and a cosmonaut remain, has enough supplies to last the crew until June. End of the quote. For the Zetas, this was no accident, but was a deliberate tearing apart of the returning space shuttle to send a message to the elite. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Columbia, written February 1st, 2003. This quarantine applies to any plans the Bush administration might have to nuke the inbound Planet X, coordinating the various nuclear devices they already have placed into space on supposed probes from a well-equipped and staffed space station. This quarantine and a decision to force the service to self-elite of Earth to stay with the populace they have such disdain for also applies to an escape to Mars. In spite of economic setbacks to the point of revisiting the Great Depression, homelessness, bankruptcy, cutbacks in Social Security and medical coverage for the poor, the Bush administration thinks only of invading the oil fields of Iraq and funding a nuclear engine for a fast track to Mars. They are becoming obvious. Since the last disaster, they have announced funding for NASA, from a deficit greater than any in history, from a banking system with a lower interest rate than any since World War II, from a tanking stock market and no hope in sight, they are funding NASA so they can have a fast track, a nuclear driver to Mars. Arrogance, and obviously the populace matters not at all. What truly was going on the shuttle, on the space station, to be finalized in the next few weeks and months? Nuclear-armed probes have been sent aloft in the recent past, to the alarm of those residents on Earth who saw the danger to Earth should the probe not make it into orbit. Was it quite necessary to arm a probe with nuclear material just to explore the unknown? This probe, the Cassini, of course, was en route to Planet X, a trajectory not even hidden from public view at that time, and this probe not the first or last such to be launched. To coordinate a nuke of Planet X, the space station well above the soup of Earth's atmosphere was required. The rush to gain debris that managed not to burn up is due only partly so the determination of the cause can be made. Indeed, there are traces of what they are truly up to among the mess, not only radioactive, the casings having broken, but the types of instruments aboard. At last they had gotten back to staffing and equipping it, or so they thought. A decision was made by the Council of Worlds and the directive carried out by those visitors who carry their concerns to the Council. We, the Zetas, were not a party, but several other visiting groups were. It matters not just who was concerned if the population of Earth will be allowed to starve, to drown, to not be warned of the coming disasters. Those astronauts who go on missions know the dangers, the shuttle having blown up previously due to a faulty O-ring. Thus they made their peace with death, 2-1. Not so the billions of innocents about to be tortured, maimed, starved, and deserted in their hour of need by those who were using the space program for their own power-mad ends. The message of the disintegrating and finally exploding shuttle was to the Bush administration, who will not fail to get the message. They will not be allowed to destroy another world. They must stand with their citizenry, so much treated with disdain, and there will be no escape to Mars or elsewhere. End of Zeta Talk on Columbia. Then in early 2003, Pioneer 10 suddenly went silent after 31 years of signals. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Pioneer 10, written March 2003. The public, those aware of the Planet X cover-up, is aware that Pioneer 10 and 11 were sent in the direction of the inbound Planet X. Along with the Columbia shuttle, this probe's death is an exclamation point. In other words, Columbia was not the first and will not be the last. End of the quote. But the Council of Worlds was very unhappy with NASA because it planned to nuke Planet X, a fellow inhabited planet. And by the rules, such inhabited planets are not allowed to destroy each other. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Nuke It Plan, written January 18, 2003. Many nuclear warheads have been positioned under the control of NASA in various probes sent aloft. The space station and Hubble are seen as key tools in such a nuking operation for visibility and good aim. Now, given this is the last-ditch plan, will it work? And if not, why not? First and foremost in failure is the unexpected, which the establishment has failed to consider from the beginning. Even were the Council of Worlds to not interfere, this plan would fail. First, the sheer size of this planet would prevent it from being dissipated. Second, with these intelligent and technological hominoids, the inhabitants of Planet X allow a probe to approach? And last, since the Council would not allow one world to destroy another, the probes would simply meet with accidents before arriving. End of the quote from ZetaTalk. But NASA proceeded anyway, under the directives of the elite, according to their plan. One probe, carrying nuclear material, the Galileo, was supposedly buried in Jupiter. And I quote from CNN, a smashing end for Jupiter Explorer, dated September 21, 2003. NASA charted the collision course to prevent Galileo, a heap of metal, plutonium, and gadgets the size of a sports utility vehicle, from striking Jupiter's larger moons, considered some of the most promising sites to search for life beyond Earth. Its propellant running low and its electrical systems on the blink, Galileo nonetheless kept a handful of instruments on during the final hours, giving scientists a chance to squeeze some final observation about Jupiter's upper atmosphere from the 1.4 billion mission. The craft went silent just before 4 p.m., having slipped behind the far side of Jupiter. Minutes later, it presumably screamed across the cloud tops on the right side of the planet, just south of its equator, speeding at more than 100,000 miles per hour. The searing heat in the upper atmosphere, twice that of the surface of the Sun, and the crushing pressure, which within minutes was more than 20 times that at Earth's sea level, likely vaporized the robot ship, according to astronomers. The sacrificial death ended an expedition that spanned 14 years and almost 3 billion miles. End of the quote from CNN. Well, that sounds impressive, but we're getting NASA's word for it that this is what happened, and the images and views that NASA provided. But the intent was to nuke Planet X for the Zetas, and thus the many warnings about an explosion as bright as a second sun being given, that the public should expect a bright flash in the sky. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Driving Blind, written September 21, 2003. On this day, the U.S. government is planning to push Planet X away from its point of passage with Earth, changing its orbit such that it is diverted in its path to an increased retrograde orbit, which would take Planet X more quickly in a clockwise direction, averse to the Earth's counterclockwise orbit direction, thus avoiding what is termed a collision of sorts, a pole shift. The much-publicized death of Galileo, sending it into Jupiter with its spent payload of plutonium-238, will be the cover for success in this regard, any flash of light or shockwave being explained to the public as a reaction to the death of Galileo. The plan is to send numerous bombs, lofted as was Cassini with nuclear material, onto the surface of Planet X and explode them simultaneously, the much-touted but utterly untried method to deflect asteroids. End of the quote from ZetaTalk, Driving Blind. And on August 31, 2004, the Genesis space capsule crashed into the desert at 193 miles per hour after its parachute failed to deploy. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Genesis, written September 11, 2004. Looking at the fallen faces on TV, the NASA personnel being interviewed after their precious cargo returning chock full of data and particles to be analyzed dropped onto the hard desert floor at 193 miles per hour, one would think they had lost a lover, a mother, their best friend, been fired from a prestigious job after decades of service, been served with divorce papers, or learned they had scant days to live as they had been diagnosed with a fatal and painful disease. End of the quote from ZetaTalk on Genesis. Well, the accidents just keep happening. And the reason? NASA's on the wrong side of right and wrong. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.